Well, the farmer was catching up with his neighbors, and so he told them that his horse had run away. "Oh, how awful," said the neighbors. "Yes," said the farmer, "but the next day the horse came back, and he brought 6 wild horses with him." "Oh, how wonderful," said the neighbors. And then the farmer added, "But then my son went out and tried to ride one of those wild horses, and he got thrown off, and he broke his leg." "Oh, that's terrible," said the neighbors. "But," said the farmer, "then the next day the military officers came to seize the young man to serve in the army, and because his leg was broken, my son was rejected. And so he's staying here with me to tend the farm." "So you see," the farmer concluded, "everything worked out just fine." Well, this is a great story, I think, because it illustrates for us what we go through in times of great change, or what we might call life transitions. When we're going through major change in our lives and we're living kind of moment to moment, with each turn of events, we're judging, was that good, was that bad? We're searching for some sense of context around it. And then later, when we look back, we can see how it all made sense and it all worked out for good. Well, of course, it's much easier to see that looking back. That's why they call it hindsight, than it is to keep an eye or have a sense of the bigger picture and the larger context when we're actually going through major change. And so for the next 4 weeks, we're going to be talking about major changes in our lives and moving through life's transitions. Now, in a way, you could say that every change is a transition, but we are going to be talking about the biggies. We're going to be talking about those big changes in our lives that we struggle with, the ones that really shake us to our core. It could be the loss of a loved one, a life-threatening illness, even a scary diagnosis, the end of a relationship, loss of a job, financial crisis, loss of a home. All of these big changes. And the result of them, when we're going through them, these are the sorts of things that make us not want to get out of bed in the morning. We may feel like we're crying all the time, or we may be afraid to start crying out of fear that we'll never stop. These are the times when we feel like we have a big hole in our chest, and we can't even imagine ever feeling good again. Well, it's interesting to note that we can go through a difficult transition even when a positive change is occurring. Positive change like marriage or parenthood, retirement, the children going off to college. Positive changes, but they can still make for very difficult transitions. So as an example, I used to live in Portland, Oregon, and I worked with a CEO there who's very prominent, very widely respected, and well-known in the community. He was a leader. And I saw him a few months after he had retired. I said, "Well, how you doing? How's retirement going?" And we had a nice little conversation. And then he looked at me with tears in his eyes. And he said, "I don't know who I am anymore." He had been so identified with his role that without it, he didn't know who he was. Now, even a positive change like that can trigger an identity crisis. And I remember having my own identity shaken up when I became a mom. You know, when you're going to have a baby, everyone tells you, "Oh, how wonderful, and you have the baby shower, and everybody's so excited, and it's also great." And it is. It is great. I'm not saying it isn't great. But after you have that baby, you also experience a complete loss of freedom and sleep, which is why being a grandparent is so great. But the reality is, and we don't always acknowledge it, it's a major change to your sense of self. And I remember so clearly sitting at my kitchen table in Portland, nursing my newborn son, and looking out the window at my neighbors, my young, single neighbors on a bright, sunny day, and they're going in and out of the house, And I had the thought, I'm never going to be able to do that again. I'm never going to be able to just stand up and walk out of the house and do whatever I want. Well, it was not a particularly helpful way to think. And it wasn't even ultimately true, but it felt so true at the time. Even that very positive change had an element of loss to it. And so we can remember this, that we are experiencing loss as change occurs, and often it feels like a death. It feels like a death because it is a death. It's a death to the way we were, to the way we were living, to the way we were being. It is really the completion of something, and it feels like a death. And so no wonder we go through these different feelings of being disoriented or grief-stricken or even terrified. You know, we wonder, who am I now? What's my life going to be like? How am I ever going to get through this? So change signals a death, but paradoxically, it also signals new life. And we know this. The old must be released for the new to emerge. In his wonderful book, Finding Yourself in Transition, Robert Brummett says that to live is to grow. To grow is to change. And to change is to let the old, or to die to the old. You see, it doesn't happen without this dynamic process of letting go of the old and opening up into the new. And so Jesus said to his disciples, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it will remain alone. But if it dies, it will bear much fruit. You see, we must let go of the old form, the old encasement of our identity, to break open and bear new fruit and live into a new life. And so we can see these ways in which transition can be so challenging, but also transformational. And so Robert Brummett divides the transition process into three stages. And it would just be so lovely if we just moved right through these, right? Just like linear, stage one, stage two, stage three, done. Well, it doesn't really work like that. We're more likely to sort of bounce around between them and feel like we take two steps forward and one back every once in a while. But the three stages are endings, when something comes to an end, and then what he calls the void. It's a beautiful description of that in-between time, in between the old and the new hasn't yet emerged. You feel like you're wandering around. And then he talks about the third stage being new beginnings. Thank goodness. So we move from the endings to the void to new beginnings. Another more succinct way of saying this is one door closes and another opens, but it's hell in the hallway. The door closing is the old, the door opening is the new, and that in-between time we just as soon do without, right? So this is the same progression and the same pattern that the great mythologist Joseph Campbell refers to in talking about the hero's journey. He uses different terms. He calls it separation, initiation, and return. So we see this in any of the great movies with adventure stories with a hero and anything that has a plot around personal transformation, that there's a separation, leaving something, going out, exploring, and finding a new way. And we see this also in the stories about Jesus. So a great example is when Jesus left his home, an ending, and went wandering in the wilderness for 40 years, where he is said to have been tempted by the devil. Time of trying to sort it all out, and then he emerged, he returned, came back to a new beginning, ready to launch his public ministry. We just see this cycle repeat and repeat, and knowing these stages and having a sense of the whole process can be extremely helpful to us, because at any given time, we can sort of have a sense of where we are in our process, and an idea of what may lie ahead. This is very useful when we're going through a major change, being able to remind ourselves that we are not crazy, that there is something occurring here that is very natural and very normal. That it is normal to go through endings and to feel confused afterwards and then to move into a new beginning. And so knowing this fuller context can help us kind of keep our balance through those stages and remind us that the way it is now is not the way it will always be. That this too shall pass. And we can even maintain an awareness that from transition comes transformation. Well, I'm sure you're thinking, that is a very neat little intellectual construct. What am I supposed to do about the pain in my heart? Well, over the next 4 weeks, we'll be talking about ways we can help ourselves through each of these different phases. But today, I'm going to offer you two suggestions. And the first one is very simple. Simple, but not necessarily easy. Feel your feelings. Allow yourself and be willing to grieve. We are terrible at this in our society. Like, you know, nope, not going there, not going to feel that. I'm just going to sidetrack around that and move on. But the truth is that the healing is in the feeling. The only way through the pain is through it. And as we move through it, we begin to feel a sense of resurgence and power bubbling up within us. But the more we avoid it, the more we prolong the pain. You see, when we lose something, when we go through a major change and we lose something precious to us, or when we let go, you know, willingly let go of something precious to us, the appropriate and natural response is grieving. Of course we feel sad. Of course we feel a sense of a death or whatever it might appear to us, because we're human. And we care, and we love, and we attach. These things are important to us. And instead of trying to pretend that isn't so or shame ourselves about what we're feeling, we can accept it and move through it. Move through it. Through whatever process works for us, a counselor, a therapist, group work, coming to church, whatever it might be, prayer, whatever our path is, but we work through it. We allow ourselves to feel the feelings that go with losing a precious relationship, or losing a job that we identified with, moving from one town to another, losing our health or having a shift in our health conditions. And we can even grieve something we often overlook, which is the loss of a dream of how we thought our lives would be. You know, we all have a dream of how our lives will be when we're younger, and sometimes that comes to pass, and sometimes it may vary. So I remember the most difficult part of one of my times of most painful loss was my divorce, when I realized that I was not only grieving the destruction of the nuclear family, but I was grieving the loss of my dream of how my life would be. I always thought my husband and I would be married forever and raise our two precious children together. Well, that didn't happen. And so we may have to grieve what we lost as well as what we never had. And thankfully, after we go through that process, we can dream a new dream. And I did, and it worked out very well. So feel your feelings, move through them, you can do it. The second suggestion is that even as you are going through your human experience and feeling what you need to feel, find some way to maintain an awareness of a higher reality. Find some way to stay in touch with the divine, whether you call it God or spirit or infinite mind or divine love or all oneness, infinite intelligence, whatever. Just keep that connection open so that you're going through your human experience and you can feel those feelings, but you're not going to wallow in them and lose sight of even the knowing that there is a bigger picture, even if you can't necessarily see it. It's like saying you may have to walk through the valley of the shadow of death, but don't build a condo there. You're going to walk through And you're going to do so with an awareness that something higher is unfolding in you, as you, and for you. Even just a little bit of awareness. You know, you can be at the darkest time of your life and still know that there's a light. That there's a light in you that is untouched. That there's a light in the universe shining through you and guiding you and everyone else into their highest expression of life. Even when you're grief-stricken, you can know that you're not alone. And when you're feeling lost and confused, you can still have a sense of a higher presence. You can still feel connected to something bigger than yourself. Well, one of the surest ways to feel connected to the divine, of course, is through prayer. We forget that a lot of times. Prayer is so powerful, so beautiful. And when I say the word prayer, I know some people are like, how do I pray? I'm not quite sure I get that. Do I need to know a formal prayer? Do I need to do certain things? No, you do not. Prayer is a very broad category. And even just having an awareness of spirit, even just thinking about spirit, is a form of prayer. Allow yourself to just imagine in a moment that all this going on in your human experience is being tenderly held in the energy of something higher. That you are enfolded in love, and you are being unfolded into something wonderful, just like the song said. Just know that on some level, and you will find as you continue that connection, that light begins to shine a little more brightly, and you begin to find your way through that dark tunnel or whatever it is. You feel your burdens lift. You move into a new day. And life seems more precious than ever before. So I'd like to close by sharing with you a story about a man who used both of these tools, the feeling of his feelings and the moving through his grief, at the same time as keeping very much a strong connection with the divine. So it was in 1947 that James Dillett Freeman heard the words that inspired his most beloved and well-known poem, "I Am There." His wife, Catherine, was having surgery for cancer. And Jim later recalled that he was in a state of deep spiritual anguish. So when the doctor came out after the surgery, he told Jim that Catherine's cancer had spread and that she didn't have long to live. But when he left the hospital, he went directly to the Silent Unity prayer room. It was then located at 9th and Tracy in Kansas City. And he went there, and when he walked in, he opened up his heart, he surrendered to spirit, and he said this: "God," he prayed aloud, "if you are there, please allow my Catherine to live. Oh God, where are you?" He later recalled that after he prayed that, he heard a clear and audible, empathetic voice speaking to him. And the voice said, "Do you need me? I am there." Well, Jim looked around to see who was talking, but he saw no one. And as he bowed his head, the words began to flow into him that became the verses of that beautiful poem. And he heard and he knew in that moment that even in this time of deep despair, that God was present. Well, his wife Catherine went on to live 10 months after her diagnosis. And in the evenings, at times when her pain was almost unbearable, he would speak the words of the poem to her. They were a comfort to her and a comfort to him. And they gave him strength after she made her transition to carry on. And Jim just knew that there were other people hurting out there that needed to hear this message. And so he published his poem, and it was distributed around the world to millions of people. And on August 7th, 1971, it actually was taken to the moon And it was left there by the Apollo 15 astronauts James Irwin, David Scott, and Alfred Warden. He planted that truth that God is always here. With that in mind, I'd like to move into our meditation, and during our meditation, share with you the verses of this amazing poem. So let's take a moment to get comfortable in our seats. Take a deep breath in. Release and let it go. Just shake off any stress or tension, anxiety. Breathe into any tight places in your body. Release and let go. You are safe. You are loved, and you are divinely cared for. Whatever change you may be going through in your life, whatever transition, I invite you to hold that for a moment in your heart and open yourself to hear the words of the divine. Do you need me? I am there. You cannot see me, yet I am the light you see by. You cannot hear me, yet I speak through your voice. You cannot feel me, yet I am the power at work in your hands. I am at work, though you do not understand my ways. I am at work, though you do not recognize my works. I am not strange visions. I am not mysteries. Only in absolute stillness beyond self can you know me as I am, and then but as a feeling and a faith. Yet, I am there, yet I hear, yet I answer. When you need me, I am there. Even if you deny me, I am there. Even when you feel most alone, I am there. Even in your fears, I am there. Even in your pain, I am there. I am there when you pray and when you do not pray. I am in you, and you are in me. Only in your mind can you feel separate from me, for only in your mind are the mists of yours and mine. Yet only with your mind can you know me and experience me. Empty your heart of empty fears. When you get yourself out of the way, I am there. You can of yourself do nothing, but I can do all, and I am in all. Though you may not see the good, good is there, for I am there. I am there because I have to be, because I am. Only in me does the world have meaning. Only out of me does the world take form. Only because of me does the world go forward. I am the law on which the movement of the stars and the growth of living cells are founded. I am the love that is the law's fulfilling. I am assurance. I am peace. I am oneness. I am the law that you can live by. I am the love that you can cling to. I am your assurance. I am your peace. I am one with you. I am. Though you fail to find me, I do not fail you. Though your faith in me is unsure, my faith in you never wavers. Because I know you. Because I love you. Beloved, I am there. We allow ourselves to bask in this knowing that God is with us now and always, and to take that sweet connection into the silence. Thank you, sweet Spirit, for your eternal presence, for guiding us over the rough spots in life, for helping us to believe in ourselves and believe in you in us. We are grateful for our life's journey, and we see that it is all for our highest good. And with this knowing and this faith and this strength, we carry on. Thank you, God, and so it is. Amen. Amen.